Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. If you cut your finger, the skin will grow back. But if you cut off your finger, well, doctors might be able to reattach it, but it's not going to grow back on its own. But some animals can regrow just about any body part, including their head. My next guest is trying to figure out how they do that and why not all animals can. Dugu Uzpilat is a Hibbett Early Career Fellow at the Marine Biological Laboratory here in Woods Hole. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for inviting.
You study, quite frankly, some rather bizarre little animals.
Yes.
Can you describe a few of them for us? Where they come from? What they look like?
Yeah, so they are actually close relatives of the earthworms that come out after the rain. You know, the worms I study are from the same group of animals, but they are coming from different habitats. Some of them are marine, some of them are aquatic pond worms. And they mostly are really good at regenerating. So if you cut them into small pieces, each of those pieces will become a whole new worm instead of dying. And in addition to that, they also can make clones of themselves. So imagine one day you see a little bump on your feet, and then that gradually grows into a whole new you and buds off. This is the kind of things they do.
I would love to have a clone of myself. I think it would be a little weird to see it growing from a bump on my foot.
Right. Yeah. Don't we all want clones? Yeah.
So for you, which came first? The interest in these kind of unusual animals or the interest in regeneration?
Interest in regeneration, because I did my PhD dissertation on chicken embryos, and they are actually terrible at regenerating. But the idea there was to see if we can induce regeneration in an organism that's not good at it. So that's how I started in this field.
And can you? Can you make a chicken regenerate, say, a foot or a wing?
So not to that extent, but what we found was when we removed small pieces of tissue that would later make the joint, elbow joint in the chicken wings, we would see a response that was partial. It was partially regenerating the joint tissue, which was pretty amazing because formerly it was shown that they are not able to regenerate if you just cut the developing limb.
Which suggests that you're getting closer maybe to understanding how regeneration works?
I would say we're getting close to understanding what are the permissive situations, environments, or contexts that allow regeneration happening. But I think we have still a lot of ways to go to understand complete mechanisms of regeneration. It's not an easy thing to deal with. Yeah.
Well, Dugu Uzpilat, part of me, like the pouty little kid inside me, wants to scream, hey, it's not fair. Why can those weird little worms make a complete clone of themselves and we can't even do the tip of a finger? How widespread is this ability, and do we know why some animals can and some animals can't?
It's quite widespread across the animal kingdom, and it's found in all the different animal groups, so it doesn't seem to be specific to one group of animals. Like, it's not specific to worms, right? There are some salamanders that regenerate their whole arm if it's cut.
And, of course, the little lizards or salamanders where you can pull the tail off. And then, yeah.
Yeah, correct. So it's not an invertebrate-specific thing. Like, vertebrates like us can do regeneration. We actually also have some limited ability to regenerate. Our liver regenerates. And in fact, as kids, you are able to regenerate fingertips unless you have lost the joint. So if it's within the first part of your finger and you still have your nail bed, you could technically regenerate your fingertip.
Really?
But the problem is the current medical immediate treatment to cutting off the fingertip is to stitch, right? When you stitch, you prevent microorganisms infecting your fingertip, but then you also inhibit the inherent regeneration response that we have.
That's a tough trade-off, but
right.
It still comes back to the question of, why would we, in either an evolutionary sense or in the span of our lifetime, from children to adults, why would we ever give up that ability?
Right.
And obviously, that's not the way evolution works. But what would be the advantage?
This is a big question that we still don't exactly know. The thing is, regeneration ability evolved several times independently in different lineages of organisms. So each time, why did it evolve? Or each time, why a certain lineage of animals throughout evolution lost this ability is a very complex question. There are some hypotheses about why humans or mammals in general lost this ability, and that has to do with immune system. Although this is not very established yet, we seem to have chosen the immune system, a stronger immune system, and in doing so, we have given up the ability to regenerate. This is one of the theories out there, but not yet established.
Okay. Dugu Ozpilot, I'm curious how, when you're trying to study whether or not an animal can regenerate a certain body part under certain conditions and how they do that, how do you actually start to answer those questions?
There are many ways of trying to look into this. The advantage of using our worms is they are very small and they are transparent, and we have ways of live imaging them. So that's one of my passions in science, essentially, that I love being able to see biological processes as they are happening. And because these worms are so small, you can put these worms on a slide and keep them happy under that slide and record the regeneration process for 4 days as they regenerate.
Wow. And you've actually compared watching through the microscope either embryos growing or this regenerative process as like watching and mapping
right
planets, another world.
Yeah. So we look at their embryos too, because we want to understand where the cells that participate in regeneration later in the adults come from in the embryo. So if we can map the cells that make up the embryo and then later the adult, we can start cataloging them and say, okay, here are the cells that can participate in regeneration. This is their molecular characteristics. And then compare them to other cells that can't do that, right? And start understanding the mechanisms of regeneration a lot better.
Dugu Ozpilot, the images that you get from under the microscope, I mean, you're using some sorts of dyes, right,
right,
to see different cells. And these images are like artwork in and of themselves. They're beautiful with all these different colored dots that are kind of slowly moving around within the organism. But then on top of that, you actually do create your own artwork. You have drawings and embroidery and even pottery that you've created based on what you see under the microscope. Do you see that creative interpretation as something separate from your science, or is that in a way part of your scientific exploration?
I think there is a big crosstalk between arts and science for me. Oftentimes, as scientists, we need to think about how do I convey this scientific piece of information the best way to an audience. And that's a really design problem. It's a graphic design problem for me. And I love thinking about those illustrations and how do I make my data most approachable. And then also working with these organisms and looking at them do their thing live, it's just always so inspiring. So I get artistic inspiration from my science work, but then my artistic work makes me a better scientist, I think, in terms of communicating science.
Have you always had that kind of dual interest in both science and art?
Yeah, my mom loves telling this story. So apparently when I was a young kid, I was sewing clothes for my dolls. And then I turned around and I asked her whether I could be a tailor and a scientist at the same time.
So you were already interested in being a scientist as what you said, as an 8-year-old, 7-year-old?
Yeah, 6-year-old. I just loved animals and nature. And she had told me about these microorganisms that I could find in the flower pot water. So that's one of the moments I remember feeling so curious about, like, what is going to be in there if I look at it? But then my mom is an arts teacher, so she always had me doing some sort of arts and crafts growing up.
Your drawings and then the designs that are in your embroidery and on the pottery have a really distinct style to them. I love them. I wonder what are some of your inspirations? I mean, what else besides the experience at the microscope feeds into your personal style?
I like using things that are unexpected on these sort of more traditional forms of art. You know, embroidery usually involves these beautiful flowers or butterflies or other animals too that are much more familiar to us. But I love putting a worm on an embroidered piece of art. And that actually is a family project. I did that with my great mother, who is my mother-in-law's grandmother, and all together we made those, and it was fun to teach and learn from each other.
Switching tracks a little bit, I was looking through your lab's blog, and you have a post on there about how to find a therapist and get therapy. Why do you think that's necessary on a lab blog?
Well, the short answer is there is, unfortunately, an increasing rate of depression in academia, especially among graduate students. And I suffered from this personally. So I feel very strongly about talking about this, and I would like to start being more open about my struggles so I can help others, because we can help each other and there's potentially help out there. So there's no reason to suffer on your own. And I think it's a part of my job as a mentor to younger generations to bring awareness to this.
Is your art part of your therapy and mental health as well?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I'm very results-driven, so it's nice to have immediate results from my art, whereas sometimes the experiments may be failing all the time during that week, so it's a really nice exit.
What are some of the questions or experiments that you have coming up that you're really excited about?
One of the experiments that I'm really excited about right now is we are, instead of going back to the embryos, like I mentioned, we are actually trying to edit genes immediately in the adult organisms, which is technically a hard thing to do. It's going to allow us to test gene function during regeneration, right in the place that it's happening in the
adult. To kind of do an actual experiment, does this gene help it regenerate in that place?
Right, yeah. Does it affect cell migration to the wound site? Does it affect the cells proliferating at the wound site? And all kinds of questions. I mean, once we have it rolling, we can answer so much.
Well, you've got plenty of time to still work on that.
So. Thanks.
Dugu Ospalat is a Hibbett Early Career Fellow at the Marine Biological Laboratory here in Woods Hole. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
And that's our show. Until next week, I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.